Welcome to the Love Story Podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Green, where we are capturing the magic of every love story. Welcome to the Love Story Podcast. We have Dr. Mark Hicks back on today. Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
The last time you were on, we were talking about your book that you had written. Do you want to give a little plug for that again one more time?
Yeah, it's called Learning Love, Building a Life That Matters, and Healthy Relationships That Last. It's available wherever books are sold through Morgan James Publishing. And in that book, I teach the five components of love that anybody can learn and practice to build the kind of relationships you want, the healthy, happy, thriving relationships that we want and need in every area of life, at home, at work, in community. There are ways to build those healthy relationships, even if you've come from a dysfunctional family or been through a divorce or have relationship trauma. And most people have some kind of dysfunction in their background. And this is a practical guide on building the kind of healthy relationships that we really want in life. And so it's available wherever books are sold. You can find an easy link on my website, markahicks.com.
Perfect. And if anyone is just listening to you for the first time, you and podcast producer Abby also have a podcast as well. So do you want to just touch on that for a second?
Yeah, it's called the Learning Love Podcast. It's based on my book, Learning Love. And we go over the same type of things. It's the practical ways of building healthy, happy relationships each week. Pick a topic to address the practical, real life stuff that we deal with and how to build those relationships. It's really coming up with strategies to face things without just reacting, or as we often do, overreacting.
Yes.
Or maybe underreacting and running away from a problem. It's the way of really addressing the stuff of life in a practical way. So each week, it's a monologue podcast. It's just me for about 15, 20 minutes or so, giving some real practical wisdom of life of how to build those healthy relationships. So it's available wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's perfect. Producer Abby had mentioned that you were talking about young adult relationships on your episode that you had just recorded together. So do you want to kind of elaborate with that? For me personally, I have two young adult children in my care. My daughter is 16 and my son is 19. And it was crazy. We were talking yesterday and Jacob had mentioned that a couple of his friends are going to be turning 20 in the next like month or two. And it was just like, oh, first of all, how do I have a son that has 20-year-old friends? That feels crazy. And I was just thinking about the things that I was doing at 20 years old, and it is like, how does anyone survive? So let alone try and have functioning, healthy relationships.
Yeah. It is. It's so difficult in the young adult years. The 20s are such a turbulent time for a lot of reasons. But one of the things that tends to happen is we are given this young adult checklist, or at least that's what I refer to it as. Not everyone checks off everything, and you don't have to. But generally speaking, most people are sort of expected that you're going to finish your education, whatever that means. It might be high school, might be trade school, might be college, graduate school, whatever that means for you. Then you're going to get a job because we got to make a living. We got to do something in our life. And we know we're going to start out at an entry level. We don't want to live there forever. We want to get promoted. And hopefully a couple of years into our career, we can get past that entry level and get our promotion. Obviously, want to find that special someone. And some people look to get married. Maybe some people don't believe in marriage. They want to live together, whatever that may be for them. They want to find that special someone and start their life. And most people, not everyone, but a lot of people are going to look to have children. And so here we have this checklist. You got to have your education. You got to have your job. You got to find that special someone. You got to buy the house because you got to have a place to raise those kids.
Yeah.
And we got to have the cat. Got to have the kids. And maybe you just have one child, but most people are going to tell you, well, you don't want to just have one, do you? You want to have more than one. They need a brother or sister. So you have a certain number of kids that your family expects you to have, whether it's two or three or whatever it is. And you have to have that house in the suburbs where you send them to good schools. So we check all this stuff off the list. By the time we get to be 35, 40 years old, there's a good chance that everything that we've chosen to check off that list is done. We've got the house. We've got the education. We've got the job. We've gotten past the entry level. And we're doing okay in our career. We've found that special someone. We've got a couple of kids. We've got the home in the suburbs. Here we are. And very many people about that age of life look around and think, is this it? Is this really what I'm doing? And it's not that they don't love their kids and their spouse and their house and their job, but it's like they've bought into a system that says, well, you have to do all this stuff to be happy.
Yeah.
those things don't actually make you happy necessarily. Those things are work.
Yeah.
All of them are work. Just having them doesn't make you happy. Having them in a healthy way, learning to enjoy them, learning to love your, what you do for a living, having a healthy, happy family life, those things, sure, they can be very fulfilling. But all of that stuff is work. In order to be fulfilled, in order to have a healthy life, we have to do those things in a healthy way. And very many times people are just checking it off the list. They find someone they're compatible with. They have the children. They buy the house. And then they wonder, well, is this really my life?
Mm-hmm.
And is this really who I'm living it with? Because too many times we have chosen a partner or someone to marry based on the idea of checking off this list.
When you think about, like, in terms of, like, the psychology of picking a partner in your 20s and picking a partner in your 30s, is it kind of the same, or is it, does it grow and evolve from decade to decade?
It absolutely has to grow and evolve if you're going to live life forever. So many people, again, get into this phase of 35, 40 years old, get through this list, and they've chosen someone that helps them check off the list, that they had the same or similar ambitions in life. They've almost treated their marriage or their partnership, their romantic life, as a corporate partnership. We have things to accomplish, and this is the person that can help me do it. Mm-hmm. Well, when we get to that place, we've done it all, we may look at that person and say, you're not the person I married. I don't know why I married you. I don't know what we're doing now that we've done all this. And we absolutely have to evolve. And a lot of marriages do end at that point. 35 or so is where we see that sort of first wave of divorce that people talk about, of people married for a few years and they got the house and the kids and then they divorce. There has to be at that point, I think, sort of a rite of passage that we start to understand, not we have these things, but how are we going to live life well with these things? Mm-hmm. How are we living life together? There are a lot of people that sort of fall into, if they do stay married, this place where they don't know each other as a couple. They're just raising kids and doing the job and keeping the house. And one of the things that we stereotype people that we do know in society, that a lot of people wonder, who is this person I'm married to once the kids move out? That empty nest syndrome. And it's because we reached that point I'm talking about, that young adult checklist is checked off. And so we just do that until the kids are gone. And then we think, who am I living with? There needs to be this rite of passage, this evolution that helps us understand that, yes, we've checked off the list, but that's not going to make us happy in and of itself. We have to live well in this. And how do we live well together? How do we have a special relationship while we are raising kids and keeping the house and doing the job? And how do I love what I'm doing for a living while I have a family? And all of these things that we have to address that I don't think are told in public. I think we just tell people, send the message, you know, check off the list, you'll be fine. And that's not how it works.
Have your nice 2.5 kids with the house and the fence and the cars and everything. And which, it's interesting that you said that people treat their relationships in their 20s like it's like a corporate partnership. How are we going to come together? We're going to join houses and then we're going to, you know, like lords and ladies of medieval times, whatever.
Yeah.
But it feels very like in the stage that I'm at to be in my, and I've had a series of relationships that are a handful of years. And then, you know, I realize that you're not really the person for me, whatever, and then date someone else for a handful of years. And then, okay, never mind. You're also not the person for me, whatever. I had said to my sister, I said, I think I'm just going to have to treat it like a business relationship. Who's going to be the person in my life to help me move through the next, you know, 30, 40 years of my life, whatever. And I thought, that's great. What a great idea that I just had. Treat a relationship like a business partnership and move on. So what would your advice be if you are saying in your 20s, you pick someone who is going to, you pick the pretty girl and the pretty guy and they come together and they have the pretty babies and they have the perfect jobs and all of that kind of stuff. How do you maintain once you have done that? And what is the way to, how do you look at a relationship in a healthy way then?
Yeah, I think there has to be an evolution at that point, that mm-hmm. we come to a place that we do understand that life is more than a checklist and mm-hmm. life is more than a corporate partnership to accomplish things, that it really is living life well together. And that comes with emotional vulnerability, learning mm-hmm. how to be vulnerable to each other. Very often, just to check off a list, you don't ever have to be vulnerable. You never have to really have a great communication. You never have to really know each other particularly well. You just have to do your job.
Yeah.
And we've sort of been conditioned for that because, and I don't want this to sound critical, it's just the way life was, but there was a time in the American culture in the early 1900s, mid 1900s, that life was just like that. You had men's work, you had women's work. Nobody questioned yep. that. You had roles that you played in society based on your gender, based on your race, based on your socioeconomic level. You had a role that you played. We don't have that anymore. Now, mm-hmm. people can like that or not like it. I know there's some people want to go back to the past and recapture that. Other people think that's terrible that we ever did that to start with. I don't debate that. I'm just saying that's mm-hmm. the way it was. It's not like that now. We don't have those roles. And when we fall into this corporate partnership, we can sort of do that temporarily. We can say, you know, this is your work. This is my job. We're going to do this. We're going to check this off the list. We got to pool our resources and buy a house. And, you know, we're going to have 0.5 kids and we're going to check everything off the list that we want. But when we get there, there has to come a place, if we're going to stay together, that we understand it's more than a checklist. It's more than a partnership. It is life together. There's a mm-hmm. connection with couples that want to live life happily together. There's a practical side to it of how do we treat each other? It's not just mm-hmm. about how do you help me get where I want to go, but it's how do we live together well? And so all of these things about how do we communicate? How are we vulnerable? How do we learn who each other really is beyond just the stuff that we want to accomplish? That takes some time and mm-hmm. that takes some effort and some communication, and that can really be a great exploration if we approach it that way. That can be a beautiful time where we actually rediscover that person and learn yeah. new things about the person that we love. And so it's not necessarily that we've done anything horrible with this checklist. It's fine, but it just leads to an emptiness if we're not careful, if we're not working towards something and have this rite of passage that says, now that we have it, how are we going to live together well and really love each other in the midst of it?
Absolutely. Which is, to be in that place, do you find that is there, when you're experiencing couples that are kind of in that situation, it kind of becomes a situationship essentially, where it's like, we've gone through life, we've done the checklist, and now the kids, and I remember this happening to me when my kids were in, my son was probably in his like mid-teens, later teens, and you just kind of, okay, he doesn't really need me as much anymore. And I felt like I was greatly equipped to deal with my kids leaving because I've raised them, I've shared custody with their dad. So they were with me 50% of the time and with him 50% of the time. And when it first happened, it felt like a devastation to me. Like, I'm half a mom and I'm, you know, all of these things. But then now I look at it and it's like, yep, I am a full, complete person. My kids can need me or not need me, and that's fine. And if they want to come home, I mean, I do, you know, whatever. Boys don't call their moms nearly as much as they should. So there's, you know, that. But yeah, it's very, I feel equipped. So then do you feel like when you have this, you know, the traditional nuclear family that has now done the checklist and they get to this point, what are some of the, like, emotional issues? I mean, obviously everything is so nuanced with like, how did you grow up and how did they grow up and all of these things and the issues that are going to come up uniquely in that relationship. But some of the similar themes are like emotional disconnectedness and some one person maybe having a little bit higher emotional IQ than the other person and that kind of stuff. So what do you do if you get to this place, you've checked off the list and everything, and now you're one person or the other is struggling more than the other? Because it seems like there's people who are really happy that like, yes, now we've got Naked Tuesday back, the kids are gone. And then you've got the people who are like, my life is over. I don't have any purpose. I'm not an active parent anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I teach in my book, and it's the first component of love that I list, not that there are any particular order to them, but is the first one that I list, is grief. And a lot of people are surprised by that. They think, well, what does grief have to do with love? Mm-hmm. But there are a number of grief processes that happen, and you've described one. Your kids get to a place they just don't need you as much as they mm-hmm. once did. And even if you're equipped to kind of go into that next phase of life and be okay with that, it still requires a bit of a grief process. It may not be horrible. When we say grief, sometimes we think of this gut-wrenching time of losing someone dear to us, and that certainly is a category of grief. But there can be smaller grief processes that we enter this thing that this phase is over. Mm-hmm. And we close the door to that. And that causes a bit of grief. It causes a bit of reflection. Mm-hmm. Even if we feel prepared to go to the next phase, we're kind of sorry that time is over. And there's a time that we miss. And we knowing how to grieve that, knowing that that's okay to feel that way, we don't have to hang on to it, but we can grieve it. We can have a bereavement that this is over as we close this door and we move on to the next. And having that skill set, it comes in really handy through all of this. As we get to the end of that checklist, that may be a grief process. We've done everything we were supposed to do, and maybe it's gone great. Probably some of it didn't go as well as we hoped. It probably turned out okay, but it never turns out exactly like we dreamed it would, because life just doesn't work like that. It's never, ever going to turn out exactly as we thought it did. Could be better, could be worse. It's probably a bit mixture of both. It's probably a little better, a little worse in all different areas. And so when we get to this place, we've done it. There's a bit of a grief process. We're closing the door on a time and on a thing that worked for us. And we're opening the door to something that's always unknown. It's always a little bit scary of how do we go to this next phase. But it doesn't have to be anything we run away from. We can grieve what was and be ready then to accept what's coming.
I just had a friend that I was talking to, and she was saying that she, the older she gets now, she feels more resistant to change and that phases are harder. The idea of just like, okay, now we've bereaved that, now we're moving on to this next thing and what an exciting time and whatever. She said she's more resistant to change and more fearful of change. Is that something that is that common, that the older you get, the more you just kind of are like, nope, I don't like this. I don't want this.
It's extremely common to feel that way, and it never works because life is going to change. Yep. It just is. And it's one of the unfortunate things that it's very common. It's almost universal. I don't think everyone feels that way. And I think it's the same kind of principle. We've bought into, well, you do all these things. You check all this things off the list while you're young and you're strong and you're energetic and you're full of ambition, and you check all this off the list, and then you're going to arrive. And you're going to get there, and you're going to have all the stuff, and you're going to be making money, and you're going to have the house, and you have the family, and you're going to arrive, and then you're just going to cruise on the rest of your life, and it'll be fine. And that's never what happens. Life is much more complicated than that. And so, yes, we get older and we've done all this stuff, and we think, when do I get to arrive? When do I get to just relax and just cruise in life? And the reality is that was never going to happen.
Okay.
We've been told that. But it's just not true. Life is going to bring changes. The kids are going to grow up. And what happens is, because we're waiting for that, we create this life, this sadness in our life, because we think, well, when I get this checklist done, I'll be happy. And then maybe we are, maybe we're not. We're probably a mixture of both. And then we think, okay, well, when I get the next promotion and I'm really hitting all strides in my career, when we get our family complete, we have this third child, and we get everything, we have all the children we want, then we'll have, when I get these kids out of this house, we get the kids out, and we think, okay, then we'll have some time together. I have some time to myself. And then we think, well, when I retire, then I'll have some time. I'll finally be done with this constant work stuff. And we've spent our whole life waiting for the next hillside to be that place where it all evens out. It just doesn't. It never does. And I don't want that to sound pessimistic. It just means there's always new things to learn, always new challenges, always new rites of passage, and always new connections we can make as a family, as a couple. It doesn't have to be anything that we dread. It's just that when we assume we're going to reach a point we don't have to change anymore, we're always going to be disappointed. There is no such thing as reaching the end until it really is the end. When our life is over, then people believe whatever they believe about the next life. Yep. But as long as we're in this one, there's always going to be challenges and always going to be things that we have to learn along the way. And that's okay. If we're open to that and we know how to grieve the past, leave it behind us, deal with the scars of life that come along, learn the lessons of life, and go to the next phase and, approach that as that rite of passage at whatever age we are, whatever stage we are, I think we're a lot happier along the way when we can do that.
And if you're doing that with a partner, and your partner is, if you're doing, you're trying to do everything right, you're trying to be optimistic about the next phase of life, you're trying to, get real jazzed about retirement or anything else that comes before that, and your partner is struggling with that, what would you say would be some skills to either come alongside your partner, or does it get to a point where you just say, we are on two separate journeys now, and that's also okay? What would you have to say about that?
I had a professor that described marriage using the analogy of ice skaters, particularly ice dancers. And he said, imagine this couple ice dancing, and they are intertwined and they're connected and they lift and they do all these things. And yet there are moments where they skate apart. They do things separately. Then they come back together. And I've always remembered that. I think that's a good analogy. Sometimes we're always going to be with our partner, and we always want to be if we have a happy, healthy relationship. And yet we're not always going to be able to do things exactly as they do. We're going to be on our own journey sometimes. We're going to have to come to grips with things at our own pace. And that's okay. If we can be ourselves and allow them to be ourselves and love each other in the process, we'll come back together. You know, we keep nurturing that relationship, but we don't have to be at the same place at the same time.
Okay.
Particularly with the grief process, you're never going to be. If you're going through a major upheaval in your life, a major change, retirement is a major change. The empty nest thing is a major change. This checklist, realizing you've come to the end of that, can be a major change. A lot of it can be. There's a lot of those along the way. And we're not going to always go at the same pace. And that's all right. If it gets to be something that you really feel like is tearing you apart, that you're not even really living with each other anymore, you're just in the same room, but you don't even know how to communicate anymore, get some help for that. I'm always one to push this counseling because, you know, life is hard and we go to doctors, we go to dentists, we go to car mechanics. Why would you do anything less with your relationships that mean a lot to you and your health, your mental health? Get help, particularly when you're at a place you're thinking, I don't even know where they're at anymore. Yeah. And we're not even living in the same planet anymore. We're just two different people living in the same house. Then get some help for that. It's okay not to go at the same pace, to feel the way you feel. And part of supporting each other is being on your own journey, but supporting them in theirs, even if it's not the same time or same place.
And I think that's the thing that's sometimes really hard to kind of come to terms with, where it's like, I am not equipped and it is not my job to be the emotional carrier of my partner and then vice versa. So yes, how do you do the nuance of supporting them and being there for them while you are both going through this thing together, this monumental thing of whatever it may be off the checklist, and then figuring out how do you get your needs met? And also, how are you supportive and showing up for this person and continuing to, like you said, you have to continue. The trust has to be there. You have to reflect on what is it that I cared about this person when we first got together. Also, is it going to be worth it to divest if you're looking at it like a business partnership? If we're going to dissolve this partnership and divest from each other, is that worth it? Usually not. You've built a life together. And then if you have, I mean, barring there being something tragic or dramatic, I think a lot of people get caught up in the, is that like, I knew who I was. Well, I would argue you don't really know who you are in your early 20s. And then you get to this place of, you know yourself now in your 30s. And like you said, you've checked off the checklist. And now here I am, and I'm looking at this person, and maybe you grew with me, or you didn't really grow or whatever. And now it's just, I don't know, maybe there's some new hotness out there, you know, maybe there's something better for me or whatever. And as you're going through these changes and you start looking around, I think people have a tendency to blow up a lot of things in their life. If there's something that I don't have any control over, I don't have control over my kids growing up and leaving. So what do I have control over? So now I'm going to start tinkering and meddling in other aspects of my life because it gives me this sense of control. And then having to, but the bummer of it is having to, you have to trust your partner, and your partner has to trust you that if we chose to do this together, we are going to continue to come back together while also being honest with ourselves as we're on this journey and we're going through these things and feeling these things and having the self-awareness, which I think is, it's the burden of self-awareness in your 30s and the gift of self-awareness is such a double-edged sword.
You're exactly right. You've hit on a lot of really important things there. We are making these decisions and starting this checklist and assuming, you know, a lot of people don't even evaluate the checklist. Some people say, you know, I don't think having kids is for me. Completely valid decision. I don't know that most people even think about that. They just think you're supposed to have kids. Because some people say, you know, marriage is really not for me. Totally valid decision. But I think a lot of people, even in our modern society where that may be more common, still just assume, yeah, I'm going to get married someday. I want to. And so we're making this checklist that we've been handed by our family or by society or church or whatever. We've been given this and we're making these decisions in our 20s when we have no idea who we are, not a clue about who we are as a person and what we want. We're just adopting this. And then we get into our 30s and 40s and we start realizing, as you said, We have this self-awareness of this is who I am and this is what I want, and it resembled nothing of what I was handed. This is part of the very difficult journey that we're in. There's a couple of things I would say. I do think that if you look at your partner then and think, why did we do this? If you are assuming there's not abuse, assuming there's not dreadful things, nobody was put on this earth to be abused. That's where we draw a line. But if it's not abuse, if you're good people and you do love each other, you can, it takes help sometimes, but even if you come to that place of thinking, I'm not even sure why we're doing this. If you want to build a relationship, you can build it even from scratch at that point.
Okay.
If that's what you want. That's what my book's about, of how to build relationships. That is a learned skill set. Again, this is not overcoming abuse and stuff. These are two people that love each other that just don't know how to live life together, but want to. Mm-hmm. That can be learned. Get some help. Read my book. Find a therapist. Do these things. There's other good books out there as well. Learn how to build that, and you can. I will say, too, if you do come to a place that you just kind of pick this person because they fit your agenda when you were 22 years old. I know what I'm about to say can be controversial in some circles. Listen, don't torture yourself with a mistake you made when you're 22 years old. I don't take divorce lightly. I have been through a divorce. It was the most painful thing I've ever been through. It is absolute hell to go through. I would not wish it on anybody. So I don't take this lightly. But at the same time, if you think I made a dreadful mistake when I was 19, 20, 21 years old, you are not condemned to that mistake forever. It's going to hurt. It's going to be painful, but you can make a different choice. And that sometimes is what has to happen, especially if there's abuse in the situation. You realize you've gotten yourself into an abusive situation. You have to make a choice at that point.
Yeah.
And so the point is we have to evolve. Maybe we evolve in a way we realize this was a dreadful idea. We made a horrible mistake and we need to correct this mistake. Do that in the best way possible. Don't condemn yourself to a life of misery. And don't hate yourself or that other person because you made a mistake. End it the best way you possibly can. Again, not taking that lightly. I've been through it. It was terrible. Still have the emotional scars to show for it. And it will leave emotional scars. But it doesn't have to be that way. If good people love each other and they want to build a life, even if they've come to the place that said, you know what, we just checked off a bunch of stuff off the list and now we don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You can build it. Love is a learned skill set. It's not just winging it. It's not serendipity. This is not a rom-com, although I do like the rom-coms. Life is not a rom-com. I don't criticize them. I think they're fun, but life is not like that. This is not just, hey, well, I found my mysterious soulmate. Now we're perfect forever. It's not how life works. That we build healthy relationships, two good people that love each other, even if you're at a spot where you think, I'm not sure where we go from here, there's help available.
Welcome to Green Thumb Etc., home of custom furniture upholstery, designer floral, and exclusive giftware. Do you need to find a gift for that crazy aunt that has everything? You'll find it at Green Thumb. Do you have grandma's old chair that nobody wants anymore, but you just don't have a heart to throw away? I can upholster it for you. Or do you need flowers for someone to say, I'm sorry? Or to say, I love you, you can find that here too. Come on down to the corner of 7th and St. Germain in downtown St. Cloud, and you can shop to your weirdo heart's content. Find us online at greenthumbetc.com, Facebook or Instagram at greenthumbetc. At this point, you're already familiar with the way the Love Story podcast operates. However, there are some stories that can't be told on the Love Story that need to be told after dark. So we started Love Story After Dark, a podcast that you can get bonus content on Patreon. There's all sorts of bonus content that you can find on Patreon, audio, video, special swag, all kinds of stuff. So if you're looking at just wanting to get the audio of the Love Story After Dark, that's $5 a month. If you want to get audio and video, $10 a month. If you want to be a part of the sticker club and get exclusive sticker swag, that's $25 a month. And for $50 a month, you can get the elite bonus merch. However, you don't have to pay any money to just get exclusive clips from any of our After Dark episodes. Get yourself added to the email list so you can get notifications for when new content drops for the Love Story podcast After Dark.
Being in the therapy field and the marriage and family field and all of that, do you feel, because we live in a time now where anybody can just pop on and read an article or watch a little TikTok video or whatever about like whether your relationship is good or bad, I think it's interesting when you understand the way that like the social media works and your phone works and whatever. You log onto Facebook, you log onto these apps, and the things that you're searching, the things that you're typing, you are giving your phone permission to read your text messages, to read your emails and that kind of stuff. So when you think to yourself, I was just talking about this with my friend, and now all of a sudden my phone is giving me all of these things, It's because it is. So in a world where if you're struggling in your relationship and you're maybe texting things like, hey, I would like for you to be more emotionally connected to me or blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden your phone starts teeing up videos for you that are like about emotional distance and, you know, whatever. Do you feel optimistic that we are living in a time now where people can not necessarily, and I self-diagnose is for lack of a better term, but you can kind of identify, this is the type of person that I am. This is what I'm feeling in this relationship. This is a video that perfectly describes how I'm feeling that I can just fire it off to my partner and let them kind of do something with it or whatever. Do you feel that that is a helpful tool, or do you feel that it is something that is like, you know what, get your head out of your phone, get your head back in your relationship, and let's just build something better?
Yeah, I'm going to say both. Okay. I do think it can be helpful. I think conversations like we're having right now to the listeners, I think, you know, this can be helpful. And there's lots of good podcasts out there, lots of good books out there that can be helpful. And you can get clips of those on social media. And there's a lot of good things, good information out there. And so, yes, it can be helpful to inform and have conversations and bring up ideas and may help you think. However, it's not a substitute for actually getting help when you have a problem. I would say the same thing about, let's say, the pharmaceutical companies putting commercials for their products on television. And you see these commercials about this product or that product of you can take this pill for this condition, that kind of stuff. Is that helpful? It's helpful in the sense that it can educate you that that's available, mm-hmm. and you can go to your doctor and have a conversation.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
But it's not a substitute for going to the doctor and having a conversation. Yeah. It just helps you have a more informed conversation with your doctor. And so if you're in trouble, you need to get therapy. If you're having mm-hmm. a problem, you need to get therapy. The social media stuff can be helpful in having a more informed conversation, particularly if you're getting your social media from people who are professionals. If you're just mm-hmm. reading any old post, I don't recommend that. You know, where does it yeah. come from? If you're reading from people who are podcasters in that area or that are, you know, authors in that area and they're putting things on social media, okay, you're getting what they're teaching in their books and their mm-hmm. podcasts and so forth. And that can be helpful. But again, it is to help educate you to have a real conversation, either with your partner or with a therapist, both. And mm-hmm. allow that to educate us, but there's a lot of misinformation out there too. We know that. Yep. And so you got to be careful with it, and you got to have conversation about it and make sure you're getting good stuff and take it to a professional.
In the realm of having conversations, you get to this point where you have kind of, you think you've reached the top of the mountain, and then you look around and you go, well, I thought there was I thought this was going to be a castle up here. Now it turns out it's just regular old life, just done a little bit differently. And also there's another hill over there that I think we'll go climb now. In relationship, in the context of a relationship, what are maybe some like five questions that you can ask your partner to try and, is there, I mean, everybody wants a, you know, a get rich quick scheme. Everybody wants a like, hey, here's just a real quick, fast quiz that I can take to say, hey, how can we get us talking? So if you're maybe struggling to have these conversations with your partner after you've gone through this checklist and you're at this kind of midlife, everybody wants to say midlife crisis. And it is, even for me being in my late 30s, I kind of look around and I go, I mean, I've been more aware of, it's not necessarily an existential crisis, but I'm more aware of my mortality. And I think that in a way that in your 20s, that is something that, yeah, everybody knows we're all going to die, but you're invincible still. Until now you're in your late 30s and you're looking and you're going, oh yeah, I could use a little, not as tight and firm as it once was. I'm going to die someday. So once you are in this place, and you're kind of maybe struggling, you're looking at your partner and thinking, great, now they're going to go buy a hot red Corvette. Instead of doing that, what are maybe a couple of questions that you can ask to start building intimacy back and relearning how to move through life in this new normal?
Yeah, I think that just asking questions is a good start. And it's a good habit to get into. It almost doesn't matter what the questions are, as long as it's not the same one over and over again. If you're just saying every day, how was your day? And you give a generic answer and you count that as conversation, that's not really going to work. I don't know that there is a set of questions that would work for every couple all the time, but there are some basic things. You know, it doesn't hurt every now and then to ask your partner, are you happy?
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay for the answer to be no. That's not a tragedy, because sometimes we're mm-hmm. just not going to be at life. It's going to be a tough time. But how can we be happier?
Mm-hmm.
How can we be happier together? And developing these skills to ask questions so that we are working on problems as exterior problems. They're not mm-hmm. becoming interior problems to our relationship. So asking the questions, how can we address this issue? How can we address this part of life? And it's not taking it personally of, if they're not happy, it's my fault because I'm their right. partner. But it's like, what is it that we need to address? And that's keeping it as an exterior problem, something you're working on together, rather than this division between us because somehow we're off base. Finding out where your partner is in life, keeping track of that, and being open about where you are in this self-awareness that you're talking about. We mm-hmm. all go through that at different times in life in different ways, and share that. If we are feeling something, be open about that. And so many times we get into these routines where it just seems like that's too deep, that's too heavy, and I got too much to do to deal with that. Make time to deal with it. Make mm-hmm. time to see where your partner is in the journey, where you are, and how you can help each other in the process. Just asking that kind of stuff, you know, how can I help you? You know, how can I be here for you? How do you feel most supported? You know, you might be surprised what they say, because very often we have an idea of how we're supposed to support them, mm-hmm. and that's not what they're looking for. The mm-hmm. classic example that everybody talks about is some people will tell you a problem, they don't want you to fix it. They just want you to listen. Those other times they might want a suggestion on how to fix it because they want some ideas. Find out where they are. Ask that. Do you know, I want to support you the way you want to be supported. You know, are you wanting me to try to fix this with you, or you just want to talk through this right now? Asking that kind of stuff on a regular basis. Like I said, I don't think there's just a one time. I try to stay away from this one time major mm-hmm. event that we turn the corner and we get everything right. That usually doesn't work. It's more of a continual, every now and then, let's check in with each other. Let's make sure. It can be every day, but it can be once a week, it can be once a month, whatever works for you. But check in and ask those questions of where mm-hmm. are you and how are you doing and how can I help?
I think it's just the idea of being curious too. If we're talking about a healthy relationship that's maybe in like a lull or, you know, some kind of like change and upset and whatever, it's the difference of how do I know if I'm sad or if I'm depressed? How do I know if I'm, you know, really happy or whatever? And just being able to check in, and you have to also be okay with the response that you get too, then figuring out a way to be supportive of your partner, being curious, being okay, asking the questions, and being okay with whatever is said. And I think you nailed it exactly on the head, where you can't take it personally, because if there is something that's happening, we all live in our own bodies. And so it's easy to think, okay, you're saying this and now everything is about me. You said that you're not happy and that's obviously about me. Not everything is about you. Sometimes it truly is just, you know, it's Sunday and I get sad on Sundays. You are not Sunday. It has nothing to do with you. And then being okay.
That's exactly right. And even if it is something that you did, that's still not about you. It's about what you did. You can change what you did. You don't have to take that personally. If they say, well, yeah, I'm just kind of upset because you did this, that doesn't have to feel like a personal attack. That's not you. That's what mm-hmm. you did. Mm-hmm. And we can make new choices once we get the information of saying, okay, I'm going to make a different decision then and do something different. And yeah. that does not have to be a personal attack. We take it personally and it leads to all these complications sometimes, but it doesn't have to be that way. It can be, I'll do something different. And
yeah.
that problem solved. And I love when you say curious. That's one of my favorite words. And I think that takes you so far in life. How do we move from this transition, you know, this phase of life to the next phase of life? How do we go from, you know, being an active parent to them not needing us anymore? How do we go from this phase of life where we were good, but now we've gotten to a different place of life and we just don't know how we're syncing up as a couple? Curiosity will take you a long way. The idea of, well, I don't know, but let's find out. And let's yeah. find out together. That can sound idealistic, but it's really not. It's really just an attitude of yes. let's see where life takes us. Let's find out. And again, we're not going to get to that plateau where everything just levels out and we're doing great. It doesn't happen in life. Life's always going to have its challenges and its lessons to learn. So if you stay curious about your partner, you allow them to stay curious about you, and you're open mm-hmm. about where you are in the journey also, and you see where life's going and how we can do this. It's a lot easier along the way if you keep that curiosity, as opposed to, this is the way I want it. This is the way yep. it should be. Should is a mm-hmm. dangerous word, terrible word.
Yep.
This is the way it should be. And so I want it to be like this. And if it's not, I'm going to be mad. I'm going to be mm-hmm. frustrated. I'm going to be upset. No, be curious. See how it is and see how you can navigate it.
Rigidity will get you a result. It's just not necessarily going to be the best result.
Yeah, it's usually not going to work. Life doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I think it really, for as complicated as communication is and as complicated as relationships are, it really, when you boil it down, it's just, it's very simple. And I think our own hubris allows us to overcomplicate things and thinking, well, yeah, but you don't understand what it's like. And you don't understand, he had this horrible childhood or, you know, whatever. And ultimately it's like, do you trust this person? Do you love this person? Does this person, do you know that this person loves and trusts you? And if the answer is yes, then okay, figure out a way to come back together. And like you said, it's just the tools in the toolbox. You're either going to use your tools individually and going to therapy, getting the help of someone else if you need to, as you go through the transitions in life and just working through stuff and the ups and the downs and all of it. And if you find yourself at a place where this person is just simply too rigid, or this relationship has just kind of died on the vine, or it's become abusive or whatever, it's pretty simple when you really look at it.
Yeah, we do way overcomplicate it. There are a lot of nuances that can be complication. Mm-hmm. That's why you do need professional help sometimes if you're in a bad spot. But yeah, you know, being nice will carry a long way.
Yes.
And sometimes we forget to be nice to our families because they're there and they're quote unquote safe. And so we're nice to people at the market, but we're not nice to our families. We show our worst selves. Being nice will carry a long way. Staying curious about life and staying curious about where your partner is and your family and what they're going through, that'll take you a long way. Being able to grieve the tough times. We know life can be tough sometimes. Having a skill set of grief and a support group to help you through the tough times, and knowing, being realistic enough to know, I need to be able to navigate tough times in life. I need to be able to grieve. That'll take you a long way. These are basic things that get us through life. And that's why I talk about the five components of love. Yeah, there's a lot of nuances. There's really five things that I teach. If you learn and practice the five things, you can build healthy relationships. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be as complicated as we make it.
Yep, I completely agree. Before we wrap this up, do you want to remind us what the five elements of a healthy relationship are that you touch on in your book?
Absolutely. We talked about one earlier. We talk about grief, that you have to be able to get through the tough times. They will knock you down. We have to know how to get back up. We have to learn how to live through the difficulties of life and not let that tear us apart from our relationships, or start putting up barriers or keeping people out because we're afraid to get hurt. That's a common reaction when we get hurt. Grief keeps us together. We have to have emotional connection. Love is about emotion. It's not the only one, but it's the one we think about the most, and it is vitally important. We have to keep an emotional connection. So we can't get caught up in all the stuff of life and just assume that our partner's going to be there or our kids are going to be there when they're grown. We have to continually nurture that emotional bond to stay in love with the people that we love. The third is practicality. Emotion brings us together. Practicality keeps us together. That we have to live life well together. That's the being nice. That's the mm-hmm. communication. That is the conversations that we have. That's keeping our mental health in check and getting help for that if we need it. But most of the time, mental health is a treatable condition. If we have depression, we have anxiety, it's treatable stuff. And that's a practical matter of getting the help you need so that mm-hmm. you can be there for yourself and for other people. So practical matters, money matters, things like that. Dealing with the practical realities of life, learning to do that so we live together well. Mm-hmm. The fourth is love yourself. And this is a vital one. It's one that doesn't get talked about enough, I think. We can't talk about it enough. You have to love yourself before you can love other people. That's not just mm-hmm. a cliche. That's actual science. It's been shown in science. Brene Brown did a lot of research on this. Other people have as well. Science is showing that that is the capacity. We cannot love other people more than we love ourselves. And we sometimes think that, well, if I get other people to love me, it'll validate me, and then I'll love myself. Sounds logical. Does mm-hmm. not work that way. We have to love ourselves. It is an organic process. It grows within us. And as we love ourselves, we have the greater capacity to love others. So if we want to love our family more, love ourselves more, then we'll have the capacity to love them more. And the fifth mm-hmm. is to live life with passion, to have fun, to enjoy life. So many times we're checking off that list, and the element we've forgotten is to have fun, to enjoy it, not just to do stuff because we think we're supposed to do it, but to enjoy doing it. Enjoy your job. Enjoy that home you're building. Enjoy those kids. Yes, everything's going to be hard sometimes, and it's going to be work, and it's going to bring a lot of tears too, but there are times, and that's why we have grief, because we know it's going to be hard sometimes, and there is a serious side of life, and that's why practicality is part of love as well, the third component of love, but let's not forget to have fun. Enjoy the good times. Look for the fun. Enjoy life. Have a ball as much as you can, and bring that into your relationships. So many times we've checked off that list we were talking about, and we just forgot to have fun. We did everything else. We're living life practically. We've got an emotional connection. We've grieved through the tough times. Maybe we even love ourselves, but we forgot to have fun doing all of that. And so keep that passion in life. If you know how to grieve the tough times and come through the difficulties of life, you have an emotional bond together. You live life well together in a practical way. You love yourself fully so that you can love others fully. And you remember to have a passion for life and enjoy the ride as much as possible. You do those five things, you can build healthy, happy, thriving relationships in every area of life.
I completely agree with you. And I'm a firm believer that if you look for the fun, you'll see it. And if you look for the bummers, you'll see the bummers. Yep. So
they're both there. Look for the fun. The bummers will show up because our brain is wired up to look for them. From way back in the caveman days, was there to look for danger, look for things that might hurt us. And that counts as emotional hurt as well. So the things that will hurt us physically or emotionally, our brain is wired up to see. It's always on guard, always keeping an eye out automatically without us having to have to think about it. It's not wired up to look for the good times, the fun, the enjoyment of life, because that's not going to kill us if we miss that. If you miss one of the dangers, then in the old days, you get eaten by a tiger. But if we miss the danger, somebody could really do damage and we could end up in an abusive relationship or something. So we keep an eye out for those things. Sometimes we miss it, but our brain is wired to keep an eye out for those. We're not wired up to look for the good things. So we have to learn to do it. We have to do it on purpose and look for the fun.
I completely agree. Thank you so much, Dr. Mark, for coming on. You are always just a wealth of knowledge and such a delight to talk to. So thank you for being here with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love being here. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Love Story Podcast. You can subscribe to the show and you can follow us at the Love Story Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Do you think you have a love story for the ages? Do you think you have a love story that's like a meet cute? Or maybe you just have a regular old love story, but you guys have been together for so long that you don't even remember how you met? We would love to have you on the Love Story Podcast to tell your story. Every love story is unique. Every love story is special. And whether you think you've got a cool story, a funny story, or just a heartwarming story, or just a story of the everyday regular old love, that's the kind of stuff we want to hear. Reach out at info@lovestoryweddingshow.com and we will schedule a time to get you featured on the Love Couch. If you're not local, we have the capabilities of doing it digitally as well. So don't forget to reach out info@lovestoryweddingshow.com or head to the show notes.